Hello and welcome to The Headquarters, the official podcast of RaptorsHQ.com, SB Nation's Toronto Raptors community. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, and I'm joined, first off, it's Russell Peddle. How are you, man?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you very much, Sean.
And second up, it's a guy who, it's going to be a fun podcast with this guy. It's Harsh Devay. How are you, man?
Good, bro. How's it going?
Good, until we got to your latest run of terrible takes. So I don't know if you've been following Harsh on Twitter at all today or recently. He's got some out there takes on certain things like concerts and movies, which the movies we're going to get to in our second segment or third segment, whatever the hell it is.
We're basically not talking about
it. Right now, I want to talk about the concerts thing. What's that, sorry?
So we're basically not going to talk about basketball today? Is that pretty much just...
There's going to be basketball sandwiched in between talking about Harsh's weird opinions on things. But, like, the first one, I just want to start this out by agreeing with something he said for once. Harsh, earlier you said that most concerts are just pure trash.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that. Why do you come to that conclusion?
All right. Well, firstly, I'm not a big crowds guy. How old do I sound when I say that? I'm just not, like, I've never enjoyed going to clubs and all that shit. The noise level's too much. And people don't sound good live, man. Especially, like, in this day and age where everybody has their, like, voice altered in studios and shit. No one really sounds good live. So, I don't know. Like, I've never really enjoyed the concert experience. I guess a part of the appeal of going to a concert is being intoxicated and jamming out to music, but like if you're skipping out the intoxicated part, what really is there? And then there's the whole idea of traveling somewhere to like just listen to music that you have on your iPod anyway. I don't understand the premise of it.
Yeah, I'm more of just like a guy who doesn't like standing for long periods of time.
Yeah, that standing sucks too.
Yeah, it's like a long time. You're standing there for like an opening band that you don't really care about most of the time. The odd time there's a band that's good enough live that it's worth it. Like Arcade Fire, I will stand to see them all day because Arcade Fire is amazing live. But like you mentioned earlier, a lot of your favorite bands end up just disappointing when you see them live. And that's not totally inaccurate. I saw like a few years ago, I saw like Red Hot Chili Peppers live. They were kind of terrible live. I liked Kendrick live, but like again, I was so trashed for it anyway. Like I don't really remember it. So yeah, I am with you. Concerts are overrated. I'm going away home this summer, so that's going to be interesting for me because I'm not crazy about it, but I just want to see friends. It's mostly what it's for, right? So, I don't know. It's what are your takes on
concerts? Here's the thing, man.
You're older than both of us, so what do you think about
it? Go ahead.
Okay, first of all, you two have never made me feel younger on this podcast. Like, standing up is so difficult. Like I'm literally a decade older than both of you. and you're both horribly, horribly wrong. Let me just get one thing straight. Neither of you are musicians, right?
No.
Harsh?
No.
Okay, there we go. Okay, well, that settles it. You're allowed to be stupid about this. As a musician, there's plenty to like in a concert as a musician, so obviously we're not speaking on the same plane here because what I appreciate about the live show is how they interpret things from the albums. And if you're talking about a band you like not being good live, well, you just like crappy bands. That's your fault.
That's what somebody else said to me.
So it's one of those things where, like, and then maybe it's my generation too. I grew up really liking going to shows. And I think the thing is too is maybe you take for granted a bit. Like I grew up in Newfoundland, and of course, like. It, once every 8 or 9 years, Our Lady Peace would come, and that would be basically the only concert we would get. So, like, you know, for me, the experience, it was such a, like, an exotic thing to go to a concert. It, like, just didn't happen normally. So, for me, when I first moved to Montreal and I could go see every band that came through, like, I did that for the last, you know, 7 or 8 years that I've been here, or almost a decade now, I guess. Yeah, just going to a show and seeing what they're going to play and how they interpret things and things they jam out on and like the instruments and their pedals and there are a lot of things for me that I like at the concerts. Now, in the meantime, concerts 10 years ago and concerts now yeah, there's a little bit of a, like the millennials and their cell phones and they're talking through performances and all that crap I could do without, but you know.
And now you feel old again.
Yeah, there it is. It's come full circle.
See, okay, so first of all, like I go to, like I've been to a few rap concerts, I guess they're called rap live shows, whatever. Here's the thing, man. Like when you go to a show with thousands and thousands of people, a lot of what makes the show great is like the artist himself or herself is focused so much on the energy of the crowd. Like that's part of the artistry that goes into it rather than the actual sound. Like the shows that I've enjoyed the most, for example, I watched Chaos in when I lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I watched Chaos with in a bar of like 50 to 100 people. And that was the best live show I've seen.
We can agree on that point. And generally, places like that are better suited for sound as well. Like you go to I'll use the Toronto example because I'd say most people that would listen, and you guys included, know Toronto venues better than Montreal venues. But the like you go to somewhere Massey Hall versus ACC. Like I'd rather listen to a smaller band or like the smaller setup and a more intimate setting. Usually because just the sound is better, because those big stadiums just aren't very well equipped for sound. Like not in the way that it'll sound good. Sure, it'll be loud, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Like the venue matters so much. And yeah, it's definitely more enjoyable if you go to like Danforth Music Hall or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's a great venue. But I don't know. If you go to like Molson Amphitheater, that place needs to just burn to the ground. Because if you're not in the seats, you're standing on an angle, like on this grassy, muddy hill that's disgusting. If it's raining, it's like impossible to stand on. Your calves hurt after like three songs. Like the amphitheater's terrible. And yeah, most venues like that are too expensive as well. Like I don't want to be spending $60 or $80 to see a band. Like that just doesn't seem worth it to me because it's not an enjoyable experience. Anyway, I'm going to have a great time away home. We should probably wrap this up and get to some basketball before we get back to...
Oh, right. This is a basketball podcast.
Yeah, we'll wrap this up. We'll get to some basketball. We'll get to some nonsense at the end. There's some serious nonsense to get to. So, yeah, on today's show, we're going to talk about the Raptors' deadline inactivity. Just sort of talk about their first three games out of the break and what we've noticed and if we have any impressions on that. We'll talk about how Luis Scola is really, really bad. And is struggling terribly lately. We got some questions that are half basketball, half nonsense. And we'll have our episode sponsor as always. And yeah, this will be a good one. It might be long. We have a lot of stuff to get to here. So, and very little of it is actually basketball. So we'll get to it now. I'll be back in just a second here on the Hit Force. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woolley with Russell Peddle and Harsh DeVay. Let's get into the trade deadline, boys. Nothing really happened on the Raptors' end. A lot was rumored. A lot of debate was had over whether the Raptors should do anything. I guess the big question is, we'll get right to it. Russell, are you upset that the Raptors didn't make a move on trade deadline day?
I was in the sense that I like trades and I like things getting shaken up in the league and guys wearing new jerseys and... seeing what number they're going to wear and how they're going to mesh with their new teammates. And I find that stuff fun. Like, I don't know if that's still just the kid in me when it comes to trade deadlines and even like the update on NBA 2K and seeing the players on their new teams and like that whole thing I like. And yeah, the Raptors were in a position where it was the most obvious buying, situation they've ever been in. So there was an extent to which I was hoping they would make a move. However, based on what was available and what was realistic, standing pat maybe wasn't the worst thing ever. Like when you look down the list of the guys that they could have gotten or it seemed like they could have gotten, none of them would have suddenly vaulted them up into contender status. Because the interesting thing about where the Raptors are right now is it's very similar to where the Hawks were last year. It's like, they're a good team. They're going to finish with a good regular season record, but you're not going to trust them to win the championship. And like when you look at if they had traded for a Thaddeus Young or a Ryan Anderson or a Markieff Morris or a Taj Gibson, like there's no way we would have turned around and then been like, okay, like there's obviously Golden State is way, way up there. And San Antonio is very, very close to the same thing. And then the next tier down, you've kind of got the Cleveland and OKC. And then you've got, like, any of those four teams win, you're not going to be surprised. Like, when people go in and people are making their playoff, their finals predictions, like, at the beginning of the playoffs, I don't think anyone's going to be able to really pick any of those four teams without trying to do it just to be different. And I don't think trading for a Thaddeus Young or a Taj Gibson, as I said before, I don't think that it's going to all of a sudden put the Raptors in that conversation. So maybe holding onto the assets and waiting it out until the summer was the right move. I did kind of want to see a shakeup, but I think the shakeup can happen a bit internally, and I'm sure we'll get to that. But yes, it would have been fun to have Kenneth Faried or Al Horford or something like that, but we would have had to give up a lot to get those guys, and I don't know how much better it would have made the team compared to, you know, a team with LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love or Steph Curry, or, you know what I mean? So,
Arsh, where do you come down on the Raptors? I know you might have a slightly different opinion on what the Raptors did or didn't do.
No, I think I mostly agree, right? Like, given, like, again, I would have liked to see them make a move. I thought the timing was right in terms of where we stand as a franchise and where our core is in terms of, you know, their contracts and their ages. I thought it made sense to have an upgrade, especially at the power forward spot. But like when you hear about the cost of some of these players, right? And especially like a guy like Ryan Anderson, where it's a rental and you're giving up a ton of current value as well, like present, you're giving up a ton of present value, and being a mid-season trade, you can't exactly fill the gaps that you'll create mid-season. Like you can't just sign somebody off, you know, off the street and make them play backup point guard or something like that, right? Like it's hard to fill those gaps without there being an off-season. Also, there's chemistry issues with, like, without these guys having a training camp to sort of get used to each other, accustomed to each other on the court, you're sacrificing a little bit of that as well. So I can see why people would feel like the end result for this season wouldn't change. I can understand that. But that's why I was enamored by guys who were on long-term contracts, like, you know, Markieff Morris originally before he started punching dudes. Or punching dudes again, sorry.
I was about to say, when did he stop punching dudes?
Exactly, yeah. or like, you know, even Thaddeus Young, who's been really good this year. I would have liked to see those guys. I think they would have been definite upgrades. But if you look at the price that was being demanded for those guys, like, that's just way too steep right now. And it makes sense that Masai stood pat. Masai's MO has always been to be patient. I'm just curious to see when he actually feels pressure to make a change, make a trade and upgrade in some spots. But I don't blame him for standing pat right now.
Yeah, the price tag for some of these guys seemed a little ridiculous. I think the thing that was floating around for Thad Young was Patrick Patterson plus the Knicks pick as well as DeLon Wright, which is that's really
ridiculous for
Thad Young. And you don't know how he's going to fit in the Raptors lineup. I like Thad Young. He was the guy of all the guys. He was the guy I was most interested in, but that's a crazy price, especially because Patterson, I mean, if you could do a deal where you're getting rid of that Knicks pick, but you're also shipping out the Scola, maybe that's better. But like, what team wants Luis Scola right now? I mean, we'll get to this. He's been really bad lately. And, you know, if you're shipping out Patterson for a slight upgrade in Thad Young, you still have the Scola problem just pervading your team. So I didn't see a deal out there or hear a deal out there that, other than Al Horford, which maybe that wasn't even on the table, that would have like appreciably raised the ceiling of the team. And yeah, it would have been nice to see something done just to sort of, like, I mean, Scola is a problem and like adding something there. And I mean, there's still possibilities, we can get to this as well, of what you can do to help bolster the power forward spot. But yeah, like nothing that was out there was really all that interesting. And I guess it comes down to, like, we've had this debate, Harsh, back and forth. Like, did the Raptors really need a deal to raise their floor? Because I think we all agree that right now, as it is, their ceiling is a conference finals and losing to the Cavs. And I still contend that in this Eastern Conference, where there's a lot of bad teams, the floor is probably the second round. And making it to the second round and having a 50-plus win season is still the best season in franchise history. And I'm totally okay with that. So, I mean, I guess maybe you guys have a different opinion on where the floor is, because maybe you're worried about a team in the first round that maybe I am not taking as, you know, maybe I'm taking too lightly. But Harsh, like, you are you on the side where you think that they could lose in the first round if they get the wrong matchup?
Yeah, I just, I don't know, like, there is a bit of recency bias that plays into that, right? Like, you're afraid based on the past 2 years. Like, they've won they've won three playoff games in 2 years, and now to reach their ceiling, they have to win eight, right? Like, that, there's a bit of that that seems like a stretch to me. Like, I think the Raptors are pretty clearly the second best team in the East. I don't doubt that. But, you know, we've seen their plans falter in the playoffs. Like, even in that Nets series, I feel like it was a miracle that they even took it that close to seven games like 2 years ago. I just think there's something about the way that their offense operates that doesn't translate well to the playoffs once teams get to see them three, four times in a row. And I don't know if that's changed given that the core is pretty much the same. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I do worry about it a little bit. Like, I think the Raptors are clearly better than the Wizards. But, you know, they were better than the Wizards last year, too. And then they got swept by them. Similarly, I worry about the Bulls, who the Raptors just can't seem to beat for some reason, even though the Bulls aren't that good, or even like the Hornets or someone like that. Like, all of these teams really scare me. I think the Raptors are better than them, but I don't think it's impossible that they lose to them. And I guess that's where the trade inactivity comes in, right? Like, where I think even if the ceiling isn't appreciably higher this year, I feel like their chances of hitting that ceiling increase dramatically, if that makes sense. And that's the way that I was looking at it. Again, like, yeah, on paper, the Raptors should beat all of these teams, but, you know, the Raptors have been the higher seed twice in a row in two straight years, and they haven't come away with a playoff series win. So I don't know.
Russell?
I think I want to focus as much as I can on this year's team. Like, I don't want to look back too much at the last 2 years, because I think there's a huge difference in trotting out like Lou Williams, Grievous Vasquez, and guys like that versus like Corey Joseph and Bismack Biyombo and what they bring to the team. Like, I don't want to think that the same downfalls that hit the team defensively last year against the Wizards, for instance, I want to think that that's not going to happen to the team this year. And while team, like, I don't know, matching up with Chicago scares me, fine, but in one game, but out of seven games, Toronto, as Harsh said, is pretty clearly the second best team in the East. Like, I don't think that's really up for debate anymore. They've got a pretty sizable lead on Miami at this point, right? Like, it's they've got a 5.5 game lead on third place right now, and are with only within three of Cleveland. And so basically, there's a good chance they hold on there, and they're in the one or two seed. And like, let's not forget that, like, one is entirely possible. Like, if Cleveland, like, is resting people down the stretch, or if Toronto goes on some kind of run, like, it's entirely possible. So, facing off with a team like, let's be realistic, like a Charlotte or a Detroit doesn't scare me. Chicago does, but that's only because of what they've been in years past. Like, what I've watched of Chicago this year, other than, you know, sure, they played the Raptors well, but I mean, they had a stretch there where they lost 10 of 12 games against teams that they clearly should have beaten. Like, they're a hurt team. Derrick Rose isn't who he used to be. Jimmy Butler's hurt. It all depends, right? Like, I'm not going into it. Of course, I'm never going to look past the series again, simply because, I mean, we just watched them lose two series that we thought they should win. But at the same time, I wouldn't say I'm scared of the other teams beating them. I still feel like Toronto is an obvious move to the second round. And I, like, you know, I say that I don't want to jinx them. I knock on wood and whatever. But I'd be very surprised to see a 7 or 8 seed in the East, despite the fact that it's, you know, the middle is beefed up in the East now, right? Like, the middle teams are better than they've been in the past little while. But at the same time, I'm not really, I don't look at a team like that. And even a team like Charlotte that's played Toronto hard in the past and is kind of heating up at the right time, like, I still don't think they're a better team than Toronto in a seven game series. So I don't know. I think their ceiling is the conference finals. I agree with that. Unless, like, LeBron breaks his leg or something. But, even then, I don't know. But I don't think they're a cinch to get there by any stretch of the imagination.
No, and I mean, I think you make a good point when you say you want to look at this team. That's, and Harsh, you alluded to it too. Like, it's really, really easy to look at the past failures and look at how, you know, DeRozan was, you know, swallowed up in the playoffs by strong wing defenders.
And he's a completely different player now.
Exactly. And, like, the team is completely different now, too. I mean, Lowry is a lot faster. He's a lot better at getting his own shot inside. He's shooting better from three than he has before. DeRozan is a completely changed player. They're using JV more often in the pick and roll lately. And, you know, that's another wrinkle they've added to their offense. Once Damari Carroll's back, they have better off-ball cutting and just another shooter that they can rely on. Terrence Ross is somehow good. Like, there's a lot of different wrinkles that this team has that they didn't have last year at all. And, like, I think we also have to look, too, at history. I mean, just if you look at the Raptors are projected right now for, like, 55 wins. Or that's what they're on pace for. And, you know, 55-win teams just don't lose in the first round. Like, that just doesn't happen very often. So while it seems like maybe that's simplistic and maybe that's making it way too, you know, general and broad assumption, but, like, I just don't think this team has it in them to lose again in the first round. And maybe this will all come crashing down and I'll look like a big idiot and I'll be public enemy number one on Raptors Twitter, which is fine. Like I was last year when I said James Johnson sucked. I think this team is equipped. And you mentioned that the East is better in the middle. I still don't think the East is very good. I mean, no, Boston, oddly enough, Boston's the team that scares me the least out of all the teams below the Raptors. I mean,
really?
I just don't think they can score. I think
they're so well coached, though, when it gets to the playoffs. That's going to make a huge difference.
I also think they're guys that they use on DeRozan, other than Crowder, who is a little terrifying. But, I mean, I think DeRozan's shown that he's pretty good against Smart and Bradley. And they can't find shot makers late in the game. Like, it's Isaiah Thomas or nothing. And Isaiah Thomas, at his height, is someone that is a little easier to key in on, I think. And but just to go on down the line, Atlanta's looking weird, and Kyle Korver's shooting has fallen off a cliff from where it was last year. He's still about like better than league average, but he's nowhere near the career level he was, and that totally affects their entire offense. And, you know, Jeff Teague has taken a little bit of a step back, and Dennis Schroeder is getting more time, and I'm not sure he's ready. And then you go down more, and, you know, Indiana, I'm still not sure how they're doing it with a starting five that includes Jan Mahimi and Miles Turner as a rookie. It's pretty amazing. And, you know, Miami, you don't know what's going on with Miami. They don't even know if they're going to have Bosch back, and they don't really fit. And they play Gerald Green a lot of minutes, and he's not very good anymore. And then you get down to, you know, Charlotte and Washington and Detroit. And, like, Chicago, I'm not, like, we can be scared of Chicago. I'm not particularly scared of Chicago because we've mentioned, like, every time I've seen the Raptors play them this year, I just feel like they're a better team. I mean, Jimmy Butler goes off, or, you know, Doug McDermott decides to torch Terrence Ross. I feel like those are just sort of anomalies that just happen to happen in those games this year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Chicago's very good. I don't think they're a real threat to the Raptors in the playoffs. And again, maybe that's me just being naive, but I think even if you look at the teams at the bottom of the East, there's probably out of Indiana, I think Indiana's probably in. If you look at Detroit, Washington, Charlotte and Chicago, two of those teams are missing it. And without Butler, Chicago's probably the third or fourth least equipped team to make the playoffs out of those teams. So I'm not convinced they're even going to make it. And if they do, I think they're more likely as an eighth seed than a seventh seed. And that's Cleveland's, you know, I mean, it's not really a problem for them. But I'm not worried about the Chicago thing. Maybe, again, maybe that's wrong of me. Maybe I'm making it seem too easy for the Raptors, but I'm pretty confident in where they stand. What I'm not confident in is Luis Scola. Man, he's been really bad lately defensively. His shooting has fallen off. He's down below 40% from three now. He shot about 30% over the last 10 or 11 games or so. He's, regressing like we all kind of expected he would. And that is the one area where it would have been nice to improve. Russell, you mentioned that there are some ways that they can improve in-house. What would you like to see them do? Or is it just as simple as switching Patterson to the starting lineup?
Listen, yeah, absolutely it is. The pairing of JV and Scola just is not cutting it. Forget offensively, like defensively, the team gives up 109 points per possession. 109 points per 100 possessions. Which would be the last the worst defense in the league if prorated over like the full, like it, if going throughout the team. And it's one of those things where like it's that bad and that's your starting front court. And JV is, you know, he's got his moments on defense, but the pairing just does not work. And when you look at the pairing of him and Patterson, you know, they only allow 103.9 points per 100 possessions, but they score. And every time I look at this, I have to look at it again because I don't believe it's true. The team scores 130 points per possession when Valanciunas and Patterson are on the floor together.
That's insane.
Per NBAWowie.com. And every time I look at it, I'm like, that can't be right. And then I refresh it and I cancel it and I bring it up again. And I'm like, no, that's exactly what it is. So, you know, that, you know, I don't think you can necessarily look at a stat sheet and say like, okay, I have to make a change now based on this. But I mean, you can look at the fact that Luis Scola, who has started at, you know, every game that he's played at the four this year. And it's funny because at the beginning of the season, we looked at that and we were like, okay, well, let's see how this goes. And it went okay. And then, and now it hasn't been okay for the month of February. He's been shooting under 33%, and he's a big that plays around the basket. And it's just, you know what I mean? Like, it's not cutting it. He's got the worst plus minus on the team over that period, like in the month of February. It's like, why is now not the time to make this change? Like, when is it ever going to be? Like, what does he have to do to lose his spot and for Patterson to get it? Especially because Patterson, for what it's worth, is shooting much better. He's shooting 42% from long range in those exact eight games. You know what I mean? And he's playing almost 10 minutes more than Scola per game. Like, why are we, especially for a team that starts so slow in general, like, why stick with what doesn't work? I've always been a big Casey defender for a lot of things, and that's just one thing where I'm like, I don't understand it. I don't understand the point.
Harsh, are you on the same page?
I think it's impossible not to be on the same page when it comes to this. I think some of that, like, for example, like, Patterson plays more minutes than Scola, right? Like, he plays, I think, 2 minutes more per game or whatever, right? So it's not like Patterson isn't getting time. It's just,
and he's playing in crunch time too. Like,
exactly. Scola's not right. But I think there's the main problem is that, and this goes back to what Casey, I feel like my biggest criticism with Casey has to do with his, just his lineup patterns and substitution patterns. I think he sometimes tends to struggle with that. So I think the other day, like, Josh Bloomberg of TSN 1050 tweeted something out about how he asks Casey if he thinks, you know, there's a change to be made with Scola, and he just talks about, you know, Scola is the least of our problems. He's such a core part of our team and brings a lot of leadership, all that lip service, right? And, you know, they often talk about how he's hesitant to make changes to his rotation because there's like a trickle down effect, right? Like, there's, if you plug in Patterson to the starting lineup, that changes your bench rotation and stuff like that. There's just a cascading effect. That's why James Johnson starts and Norman Powell starts and not Terrence Ross. But I just think I feel like that's just an archaic way of thinking. Like, there are ways you can structure your lineup and substitute guys in and out to retain the effective lineups that you have, right? So if he's so worried about, if he starts Patterson, then he gets less time with Lowry plus the four bench guys, like that lineup that's been destroying people all year. Like, if he's worried about that, there are ways to make that happen still, even with Patterson starting. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like pulling Scola out of the starting lineup and putting Patterson in means that you can't play that lineup. There are ways that you can play around with substitution patterns to still maximize the amount of time that lineup spends on the floor. Like, I just feel like he's missing the trick there with the way that he can structure how he plays guys. And that's because of the thing that he tends to struggle with the most, which is substitution patterns.
Yeah, I mean, you look at James Johnson, he's a guy that you think Casey could probably slide to the four a bit more often, just to sort of cut into Scola's minutes. and you know, maybe keep Patterson's minutes around the same. Also, I think this is also something that can be rectified once Carroll comes back. I mean, he's been out for so long that it sort of seems like this is the way things are going to be. But if Carroll comes back and he injects so much versatility into how they can go with the 3 and 4 positions, like, who's to say that when Carroll comes back that Scola, maybe he keeps starting, or maybe Patterson starts and then maybe Carroll plays, you know, 10, 12, 15 minutes at the four a night, and that totally cuts into what Scola is needed for. And I think KC is smart enough to realize that, you know, come playoff time, Scola is going to be an absolute liability. And if he doesn't realize it before the playoffs, he'll realize it in game one against whoever the Raptors play, and he'll make the adjustment then. I have confidence in that, at least. Because, like, it's pretty clear that you know, Scola-Valanciunas pairing is, it's so immobile, it's so bad defensively. I mean, I get nightmares thinking about, like, what the Hawks could do to that with Millsap and Horford and how they could just torch that combo. And there's a lot of teams that can do that. Boston could probably exploit it, even though Valanciunas on the other end just destroys Boston because they have no traditional bigs. So yeah, I think once Carroll comes back, it'll add a whole bunch of, you know, versatility and lineup options for Casey to play with, and maybe that makes that decision process a little bit easier for him, and it's not so he's not just stuck in his ways with the way he's been doing it lately. Yeah, I think that'll do it for this segment. We went pretty long here. We still have a lot of movie takes to get to. So we're going to wrap this up. We're going to come back on the other side. We're going to talk quickly about the first few games after the All-Star break for the Raptors. And then we're going to dive into some questions and Harsh's awful tweets. I'll be back in just a second here on the Headcrunch. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Wilde with Russell Peddle and Harsh DeVay. Quickly, let's touch on the first three games out of the All-Star break against the Bulls, the Memphis Grizzlies, who are hilarious now, and who the hell else did they play?
The Knicks.
The Knicks, that's right. That was a forgettable game because the Knicks are trash. Anyway, Russell, let's start with you. Any impressions, anything new that you've seen from the Raptors since the All-Star break? Anything that's worrying you? Anything that's exciting you? Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to throw in they won 14 out of 15 games before the break, not including the Timberwolves game. And like, I'm kind of throwing that in here because they were looking ahead. I felt like that game, they were looking ahead to All-Star weekend because I want to lump that and the Chicago game together just because they gave up 117 and 116 points in consecutive games, even though it was like, you know, there was an All-Star break sandwiched in there. But those two games were quite discouraging. In terms of just the defense completely like taking a hike after being pretty darn good during the whole the streak, but they kind of got it. Like, there's a combination of course getting it back against Memphis and New York, but also a combination of, like, it's also has to do with the fact that New York is terrible and Memphis is going through some stuff. So my biggest takeaway is, listen, since the break, they've won 2 out of 3. That's pretty good. They lost a close game to Chicago that they were winning. Like, they did really, like, they had a good first quarter, and it felt like, okay, yeah, they're going to, you know, they're going to keep this going. And then it kind of fell apart after that. I don't know if that's just fatigue of hosting the All-Star game. Like, I'll gladly, like, use the schedule as an excuse for that. Like, I'm not going to look at that and say, like, oh my God, we can't beat Chicago. You know, there are a lot of factors that went into that. And, you know, the last two wins, fairly good. Didn't allow either opponent to score over 100 points. What was really encouraging to me in the Knicks game is, you know, to play a bad team and not play down to them and not let them come back and have to play Lowry and DeRozan 40 minutes. That's something we don't see this team do very much. And, you know, like, they let the foot off, they kind of like take their foot off the gas and let bad teams that they're beating badly get back into it. And I appreciated watching them really take it the whole 48. So I think the takeaways are mostly positive. I still want to look at the overall picture and say that, you know, they've won a lot of games out of their last 20 or so. So much so that I can remain confident in them. And, you know, we'll see going in the schedule the next little while is maybe tougher than it looks on the surface. Like, the Timberwolves game on Wednesday, fine, but then they have the Cavs, which I think will be a really good litmus test to kind of saying if they really are the second best team and if they can really contend with the Cavs. But, you know, Pistons, Jazz, Blazers have been playing better than most expected. So I think they're headed in the right direction. It'll be good to see if they can keep it going. Like, I don't know. I didn't panic after the Bulls game like most people did. I was discouraged by the combination of that and the Timberwolves game and the points they gave up and how bad the defense was. But I think they've righted the ship in the last two games.
Yeah, the Bulls loss happening the day after the trade deadline where they did nothing didn't really help their case.
No.
Harsh, anything from the first three games out of the break?
Yeah, that Bulls game was. I was pretty discouraged by it initially, like just when it happened, because I was like, oh god. Let's not have a terrible second half of the season again. Also, having two straight games of giving up like over 115 points just didn't sit well with me as well. In addition to that, and you know, I was just frustrated by the inability to beat the Bulls like over and over again. Like how many times? Like this? Like even the trashiest version of the Bulls. I don't know if that's a word, but like
trashiest.
Trashiest version of the Bulls, and we still can't beat them. I was just so frustrated by that. But I think we bounced back nicely, like the two games after that. I thought that was the exact kind of response that I wanted to see. You know, really strong defensive performances against all, you know, albeit two weakened squads. But you know, last night, for example, they had a lead against the Knicks and it never got lower than 12, I think, in the fourth quarter. So that was like really encouraging to see. And, you know, they got Lowry some rest and DeRozan some rest as well. And I've been on that bandwagon for a long time. Like we need to get them more rest. We need them to be healthy for the playoffs. So that was good to see. I think the signs are good that this is going to be the season where we don't see a drop-off. Well, they didn't have a drop-off 2 years ago, but you know what I mean? Like after last season, everybody's been worried about that. I think they're in a good position. They're getting healthier, which is all that the type of things that you want to see heading into the final stretch of the season. So I think things are good overall. Like there's nothing really to be that worried about. Like you're going to have some losses that are disappointing. It's just, I guess the way that they lost was annoying, but I think overall things are pretty good.
I agree.
Yeah. The timing wasn't great. And, like for the Bulls loss in particular, and yeah, that Wolves loss left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths, but yeah, I think everything's pretty good. And like last year, the collapse started well before the All-Star
yeah,
break. It's
yeah,
not like
yeah,
the All-Star break sure. happened and they just fell off a cliff. Like that January, it was pretty rough. And I think they were only saved by having like a long homestand in there against some pretty bad teams that they were able to like sort of tread water through. This year, there was no let off in January, and obviously February, they went on the streak, and I think I guess late January into February. And, you know, this just seemed like business as usual. Like, yeah, they lost to Chicago. They've had a few weird losses this year to teams that maybe they should beat. And then, you know, they had the Knicks game that I think just proves that, yeah, this team is like they're going to beat up on the teams that they should beat most of the time. And that's what you want to see. The thing I've noticed is JV looks really good, man.
Like, yeah.
He's looked like a monster offensively the last couple of games. Maybe that's matchups. Maybe that's, you know, Chicago not having, you know, their full complement of big men and the Knicks having, I mean, Robin Lopez is a really good rim protector. But other than that, there's nothing really going there for the Knicks inside in terms of defense. And JV's looked really good so far in his first three games. I think he's averaging, you know, close to 20 points. He had double-doubles twice. He's looking really good. His defense is still a little – it's a work in progress, but I think that's going to be the case for a while. He's still 23. He's still figuring out the new system, I think. And, you know, playing with Luis Scola probably makes him look a lot worse than he actually is. I think when he's with Patterson – as you alluded to with the defensive rating, Russell, like he's a lot better with Patterson.
Can I add something? Interesting tweet I just saw from Josh Lewenberg a couple minutes ago.
Yeah.
The NBA plus minus leaders since January 1st. Are you ready for this? Number one,
yeah.
Draymond Green, plus 311. Klay Thompson, plus 308. Steph Curry, plus 284. All makes sense, right? Like the
yeah.
Golden State's all-star trio. Number four, Patrick Patterson, plus 220.
Wow.
Imagine that.
That's kind of surprising.
It is. Now, I mean, put you like plus minus isn't an exact science as to who's playing well and who's not, but I mean,
that's telling though.
It's very telling that he's that high up. That, and that's a big part of, like, you know, the bench unit doing so well and everything like that. But in lineups that he's playing, the team is a lot playing a lot better than their opponent. So
Patrick Patterson good, Luis Scola bad.
Wow, we could have said that and saved like half an hour.
You know what else is bad? A lot of the questions we got in Harsh's takes.
Oh god.
Want to dive into these now?
Sure.
Okay. So first question from Will Liu. Who has the worst hair on the Raps? This is a two-parter. I'll get to the
worst hair.
Can we define worst hair? Because, like, generally I think the craziest hair would be the best hair. So
the least pleasing to your eye.
Scola.
Yeah, I was gonna say Scola. Although it's kind of pretty sometimes.
We're the contenders.
I mean, I guess Bebe fits into that.
He's got the best hair, though.
Yeah, I like Bebe's hair.
Okay, yeah. I guess Scola. James Johnson isn't doing anything weird with it.
No,
anymore.
It's just normal now.
It's fine. It's a clean cut. Like, it's.
I think it's Scola.
Like Lowry, do you guys like the Lowry fade?
Yeah. Blinded, it's a good look, man. It makes him look skinnier.
It does. I love that DeMar is kind of stuck with the mini fro this year.
Oh,
that looks so cool on him.
That's who it is. It's DeMar DeRozan.
The best hair?
The worst.
No, come on, man. It looks so much better like that.
He just has
DeMar has short hair.
I don't know.
When DeMar has short hair, he looks like an alien. I think that's true for most players. And like Kyle, I love when like the NBA like Twitter, whenever Kyle has a big game, they'll tweet out a picture of Kyle, and half the time it's from last year, and he's like bald and fat, and it's funny.
I think
the worst hair is Scola. I think that's something we should agree on for once. Like, it's long and greasy.
Wait.
Like some guy that was in like your high school that was, you know, putting together Dungeons and Dragons at lunchtime and just got
the worst hair is, if you're including beard, it's Jonas.
No, Jonas's beard is good this year.
I guess when he was bald earlier in the year, it was really bad.
There was that one time where in the middle of the season where Jonas shaved his head.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
And dude just looked like a freaking bouncer at a club.
I was thinking how cool it would be if, like, the Raptors, there were if they had been in on Kenneth Faried, let's say, and eventually we could have had a lineup that included like Damari Carroll, Kenneth Faried, and say Bebe all at the same time. That would have been an all hair lineup.
Second part of this question from Will: why does Harsh love the CFL? This was your other bad take. Why do you love the CFL?
I missed this. I have to get a dedicated feed to Harsh's takes.
Okay, this was a misrepresentation of my take. Okay, all I said is that Canadian football in general is kind of cool to Will, right?
And
I think it was like a conversation of how football is so embedded into Southern American culture, right? Mm-hmm. Like in Texas and shit. And I was just saying, no, you know what? Like, football is not that Americanized. Like, there's a whole Canadian element of football that's actually really cool. And so then he took it to Twitter.
If you live in like Saskatchewan or Winnipeg, sure.
Right. Right. And so
you've got
better
things to do.
So they thought I meant like the CFL, but what I was really talking about was specifically just like Saskatoon and like Winnipeg. Like, I don't care about
football,
the Argos
fans and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, like it's kind of cool that like this tiny ass town and like the prairies all gets out for Rough Riders games.
Yeah, I agree with that. That is cool.
Yeah. That's all I'm trying to say. And then the CIS is cool as well. Like you think about Laval or the University of Montreal, like all these French-Canadian people, like, you know, presumably some of them are Francophones, like the dudes who made it to the NFL recently, like Laurent Duvernay-Tardif on the Chiefs.
A friend of an acquaintance.
Yeah. See? So, like, you know, then you listen to him speak, and, like, that's a dude from Quebec, and he's amazing at football. And it's I don't know, it's just kind of cool to me that there's like an entire different culture of people enjoying this sport that seems super American.
That's not a terrible harsh take, and I don't say that very often, but
yeah, that's all I'm trying to say.
I'm in the Toronto bubble where the CFL couldn't mean less. But yeah, I guess you're right there.
It's fairly popular here in Montreal. Like, it does all right. Like, we basically have the Habs and the Alouettes, and when the Alouettes were good, that was it was pretty fun. I went to a scattered game. It's good. It's a good cheap ticket to go and watch the football and get drunk.
Actually, when I first moved to Canada, the first city I lived in was Hamilton, and so I grew up.
CFL.
Yeah, and I loved the Tiger Cats for like a good 3-4 years, and then I hated the Argos. So I don't really care for the Argos, but the Tiger Cats I still kind of like.
Tiger Cats games are actually fun. Like, my girlfriend lives in Hamilton, and her parents have season tickets, so I go to games from time to time. And I was at, like, their conference final game a couple years ago, and that was a blast. They love it there. Next question from Sasha Calrath.
Before you move on, I just wanted to add that I at the end of the day, I would still rather watch, like, the Tennessee Titans and the Jacksonville Jaguars than I would watch the Grey Cup.
Oh, me too.
Hell yes, you want to watch the Tennessee Titans.
Like... Oh, wait, isn't that your team?
Yeah.
Hell yeah, it is.
How did that happen? First
overall pick, baby.
You picked the most irrelevant team you could think of.
It happened because the first football game I ever watched was the Music City Miracle. Nice. So that printed on me a bit. All right, moving on. Sasha Kara, make the perfect boy band using 5 Raptors.
All time or current?
I was just going to go current, but you can go past.
Oh, no, I don't want to think that hard about this.
Okay, I'll go first. Mine would be... Kyle is the lead man, like the Justin Timberlake style guy. Second would be, I think you got to have Bebe in there. Just, I feel like he's a good dancer. You got to have, I think DeLon Wright is like the young guy who's going to have a solo career one day. So he's in there. Patrick Patterson seems very in tune with pop culture. So he's in there. And Corey Joseph has the boyish looks of someone who should be in a boy band. Harsh.
Oh, man. All right. I'll go Bruno and Bebe for sure because they have that chemistry that can't be replicated. I'll go as Luis Scola as like the do-it-all guy who, you know, the versatile guy.
The Joey Fatone.
Exactly. The wily vet of the boy band. He's the Joe Jonas. Sorry. I don't know why I did that. All right. And then the last two, I'd go Corey Joseph. I like Corey Joseph. That's a good selection. And then I'll go Kyle Lowry. You know, they have baby faces, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think that's a core requirement to be in a boy band.
Russell, your turn.
You guys are making references to people who I assume are in boy bands.
Only NSYNC and I and Jonas Brothers, yeah.
Don't have that frame of reference, so I'll just say yeah, what they said.
All right. From John Godis, our buddy. If Harsh had to rank the importance of the podcast he does, where would the headquarters be?
Tread lightly, Harsh.
Oh, geez.
You can say last if you want.
No, I mean, I only do 2 podcasts.
Well, yeah.
The Defeated is part of your brand, like yeah. More so. Than
this yeah, thing. I think The Defeated is like something where I have, I'm not saying I don't have creative input here, but I'm just saying like that's something that I actually
this entire run. Podcast has basically been about you. You have a lot of input.
That's true. But that's only because I'm horrible.
Touché.
So I'd say The Defeated is first, but just so I can flaunt how much of a generalist I am. But then for Raptor-centric stuff, which is my first true love, I would say the Raptors HQ pod is right up there as well.
Very political answer. You sound like Ross Atkins.
I can't speak on it at the moment.
All right. Next question from Arun. Is there still trepidation about staying put at the deadline now that it's over? I think we went over this. I'm okay with it. I think they'll be just fine. Harsh?
Yeah, me too. I think I'm fine with it.
Russell? Like I said before, I think a deal would have been fun, but I'm okay with it.
Cool. Arun, again, when do you guys want to meet up for good pizza? Harsh excluded.
I'm not going to...
We haven't talked about the pizza thing, have we yet?
No.
What's the pizza... Like, the 100-point thing, or...?
No, Harsh just being a giant pizza stand.
Like, he likes it?
Yeah.
He loves it.
Yeah, pizza's really good. I actually wish there were more outlets here.
God.
There you go.
It's good. Now, it's no Domino's, but, I mean, it does the job.
Yeah.
I facetiously agree with Harsh that pizza is good. Pizza is terrible.
No, here's the thing, man. Pizza is not meant to be that good.
That's a fair point.
You know what I mean? Like, exactly. Pizza is the literal definition of junk food.
But the crust is like so important, and Pizza Pizza can't even get the crust.
But they have the best dipping sauce.
That's a bit. That,
you can add the dipping sauce to.
They've got it all there, readily available, and in big portions. I'll give it to him, man. Like he. Oh my God, I've agreed with him too much on this podcast. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
No, but I mean, Pizza Pizza is not something we have a lot of here. So it's when we get like I have it a lot when I'm in Toronto, and especially if the Raptors score 100 points. But
oh my God.
But I like it. It's a good place to go.
It's
for
also
a
everywhere. Which is awesome.
Exactly. There it is everywhere. Here it's not everywhere, but
yeah.
You have no idea how happy I was on Sunday when the Raptors had 98 points and there was like 28 seconds on the shot clock and they just held it for the shot clock violation, giving the morons pizza.
Why do they even keep that?
They got to change that.
Like I like what some teams do, where like hold a team under 100, because then you get people rooting for the defense, and it makes sense if you boo when the team scores their 100th point because you're booing the other team. Like what I've never liked is like if someone on our team isn't making an effort to get that 100 points, then it's like you're booing them to make them do something that's not sportsmanlike. And it's like stop it, we're smarter than that. Like Toronto is getting a reputation as a good basketball city, which means we have to drop crap like that.
I feel like that you run the risk there, Russell, of if you rewarded for under 100 points of just people replacing the defense chant with pizza, which is just bad news all around.
Let's just they get still rid do of it. Together. Let's
they still do it though.
That's true.
They do the we want pizza.
Oh, God. Next question again from Sasha. Where do you all stand on the harsh button? I think it's the greatest idea that Blake Murphy ever came up with.
Yeah, which is funny because he didn't intend it. Like he wasn't subtweeting Harsh as badly as the rest of us were super tweeting him. but I've always agreed with that on like for back when people were arguing that it should be on Facebook. But I think we should be able to dislike stuff because there's plenty of stuff I want to dislike.
Should we provide some context as to how this happened?
Yeah, probably.
Harsh, you go ahead.
I don't remember what happened. He wasn't
even there for it.
Oh, no. Sorry, go ahead.
So Blake Murphy tweeted out something about, I wish there was a button that I could press to acknowledge that I read someone's tweet, but not to say that I like it, but that I think their take is terrible or something like that.
And then basically everyone who knows her.
Immediately three people said, oh, like a harsh button?
Yeah. Yeah, it was like universal hate.
I will reiterate that we can not hate you. We can like you a lot, but still disagree with every stupid thing you say.
Oh yeah, that's I like that. I like that a lot. That's what I tell myself.
All right. Speaking of stupid things Harsh has said, now it's time for the real thing to get to here. So just before this podcast came on, we were a little bit late in starting up, and Harsh decided to tweet out some just horrible, heinous takes about Disney films and Pixar films. Disney animated films in particular. His Disney animated films aren't terrible choices. I do agree. He put Bambi at like 12 billionth on the list, which I agree with. Bambi kind of sucks. His top five was 1, Mulan, 2, Lion King, 3, Aladdin, 4, Tarzan, 5, Emperor's New Groove, which I have issue with Mulan and Emperor's New Groove. Lion King, Aladdin, and Tarzan are fine. Although I've never actually seen all of Aladdin because I was scared of it as a kid. And I haven't watched it since.
Aww.
Isn't there like a big giant like
what
desert?
What were you afraid of?
What was that like 3 years ago?
No, like the big giant sand lion tiger thing in Aladdin always scared me when I was a kid. So I never got past that part.
All right. That was kind of creepy.
Yeah, it's not like the movie's made for kids or anything. Anyway, the Mulan take is
that
really...
is risky for that number one.
No, man.
Like, what? Mulan why is that? Excellent.
You're doing that to be controversial. Like, there's
no
way that's the best Disney movie ever.
No. I actually love Mulan. I've watched Mulan like 80 times.
What is so great about it for you?
And here's the worst part: I watched it like 50 times when I was like 14 years old. Not even when I was a kid. I was like a fully grown person, like just watching the shit out of Mulan. No, man, Mulan's excellent. All right, first of all,
this is a touchy question, but does it relate with the minority section of it, or
There is that element to it, right? Which is why I put Brave first in the Pixar stuff as well.
Right. Yeah.
I just found it empowering more than the rest of the movies. And also there's a historical element to it. It's like about it's based on a Chinese legend. I don't know if it's true or not, but my Mulan knowledge isn't up to snuff, but you know, it seems not as far-fetched as other animated films. And I know that shouldn't matter when you're a kid, but I don't know, I just found that shit powerful.
I think that's well justified, but yeah. I mean, there's something, I don't know. I don't know how you could put it over something like The Lion King, for instance.
But then there's also Eddie Murphy as Mushu was so good. And they had the best songs, man. Mulan had some great songs.
The music in Mulan was good, you're right.
Oh, so good.
I also, I'm with you. Mulan's, I like the recent, like 90s and on Disney movies. Like, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, not many of the old, like, I'm not a big, like, I'm not going to watch Sleeping Beauty or Little Mermaid or.
No.
This is such a boy list too, right? Because we've left off like Snow White, Sleeping Beauty.
Hey, I put Mulan first, man.
Little Mermaid. Yeah, but you justified that well. Like, you know what I mean? Like for me, I can't believe we're having this discussion on this freaking podcast. Anyway,
name your top five.
Little Mermaid is up there. I don't know why. I really, I liked that movie growing up. I was a kid, man. Like you just. I don't know. I was into it for whatever reason. I don't know.
Plus the songs.
I like the little crab or whatever he was, or the
Sebastian.
Yeah, the music. That's a big part of it. The music stuck with me. But
so for me, I'll go through my top five. Russell, you can concoct yours. Mine is Jungle Book number one. I'm so excited for the live action version of that movie. It's gonna be great. Two is Hercules.
Hercules was good.
I watched it so many times as a kid. Number three. Lion King. 4, Treasure Planet. Underrated. Dude, Treasure Planet.
What's the other one that you said? Oliver and what?
Okay, I'll get to Oliver and Company in a second. Number 5 for me is Fox and the Hound. I watched that religiously as a child. But yeah, Oliver and Company is underrated.
What is that? I literally don't know what that is.
It's about this little cat who I'm pretty sure gets like orphaned and then lives with a bunch of dogs. It's great.
Can we just take a second and talk about how bad Bambi is?
It is really bad.
Bambi is so bad. It's so depressing. I don't think I've ever been sadder than when I watched Bambi.
Also, like, no character annoys me more than that stupid bunny.
Thumper.
Yeah, Thumper, yeah.
Bad character.
God, he was the worst. Bambi's the worst, man.
Russell, you have a small child. You're going to be watching a lot of these movies soon, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's going to be coming up for sure. So I'm going to have to really curate these and make sure
I'm here for you.
Put them in the right direction.
Okay, so the more egregious thing.
Whether I want it or not, basically.
The more egregious harsh take was his Pixar movie rankings. This is inexcusable, man. And I think the responses to it were.
Oh, dude, people are so mad at me.
So here's your ranking. Number 1, Brave. 2, Finding Nemo. 3, Monsters, Inc. 4, WALL-E. 5, Up. 453,467th Toy Story.
No way there's been that many Pixar movies.
That's your takeaway.
Well, that there's a flaw in his rankings. That's...
yeah. What
therefore, we don't have to take them seriously. So.
What's with the Toy Story hate, Harsh? Because it's wrong, but try to justify it.
All right, guys, you guys are gonna end up agreeing with me. I'm warning you.
You're like the Kanye West of Raptors HQ. You just say stuff, and there's no way you actually mean it. You're just doing it because you know that we're all.
There's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of that. I like upsetting people a little bit, but here's the thing about Toy Story, man. All right, so when Toy Story came out, I think it was 1995, maybe 94, something like that. I probably didn't watch it until I was like 8 or 9 years old. And I was never a big toys guy. Like I lived in Kenya and I lived in India, and action figures and toys were not a big thing in my life. Like I watched random sports. Like I watched cricket and like table tennis over playing with any sort of action figure. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, man, I was creeped out by Toy Story. Why were they alive? Why were the toys alive?
It was okay, but like the Jungle Book was cool because, you know, the animals were talking and stuff.
Yeah, because, like, you know, animals, you don't have animals in your house.
I do have animals in my house.
No, you don't have bears in your house or panthers. Well,
no, but I have cats and they don't talk to me.
Right. I guess that's true. But here's the thing, man. At least in Jungle Book and stuff, like, they're actually all interacting with one another. In Toy Story, the toys are sneaking around and they're alive.
It's the sneaky aspect that you don't.
It's the sneaky toy being alive aspect that really just did not mess with my childish mind.
I can't believe how much time we're dedicating to all this crap.
There's still so much more time because I have to give my rankings.
Oh, my God.
Let's see your rankings.
Toy Story is, I don't know what to say, man. It's a classic. If you're creeped out by that, I don't know. I guess that's on the level of me being creeped out by the snow sand tiger thing in Aladdin.
Yeah, because that's a cartoon, man. It's not even Pixar, which is like live motion or whatever the hell that's called.
Toy Story is my number two. That's my childhood film. I had all the toys when I was a little kid. Unlike Harsh, I had, like, you know, the T-Rex. I had Woody. I had Buzz. I was a little. I didn't have many friends. I rocked the Toy Story toys pretty hard. Number one for me is The Incredibles. I think it's so smart. It's like one of the more brilliantly put together children's movies I've ever seen. Lots of adult humor in it that you pick up as you watch it as you get older. It's a great film. Number two, again, Toy Story. Three for me is A Bug's Life. I think A Bug's Life.
Come on.
Dude, what do you have against A Bug's Life?
It's just, there's nothing memorable about it.
Oh, yeah, I can't really think of anything. Oh, there's the whole circus scene with, like, P.T. Flea Circus and the big caterpillar guy and the stick insect guy. Yeah, that's a great movie. Hugh Laurie plays the stick insect. It's a good get. Four for me is Monsters, Inc. And five for me, off the board, not actually a Pixar movie. It's one of their short films. Jerry's Game, before Bug's Life. The old guy who's playing chess against himself. That's my number five. Anyone seen that?
No, I haven't.
Wow. Watch it on YouTube. It's great. It's like 5 minutes.
Watch Up. That first 5 minutes of Up.
Up is like, if you're talking about cripplingly depressing dude, movies, that's, Up is
that's
there,
true.
Man.
The first 5 minutes of Up were like so painful.
It's like all of Bambi and condensed into one.
You see, but
like,
the thing is, they didn't string it out across like 3 hours.
Yeah, I guess. The kid is a little annoying in Up.
Yeah, he's definitely annoying.
Russell, what do you think? Where are you at on this Pixar?
I'm sure no one cares. I'll take Harsh's and just put Toy Story in its rightful place at number one instead of Brave. And his Finding Nemo, Monsters, Inc., WALL-E up 2 to 5 is fine by me.
Yeah, WALL-E can go die in a pile of garbage.
Is Frozen Pixar movie?
No, it's it's not technically not Pixar. It's under their animated category.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay.
Frozen's pretty great, though.
Yeah, I would have put that in there somewhere.
Oh, I was not a big fan of Frozen. I thought that was a bit overrated.
Yo, but on the real, Elsa's hot as hell.
On the real. Can we move on to something else? I've somehow... This podcast has made me feel really young and crippling. Like, I can't speak English and really old.
One final note on Pixar movies.
Really?
Well,
one more you got to get in there that we haven't gotten in yet.
I wanted to mention Finding Nemo. I like that movie, but I think it got ruined for me by the fact when I was a kid, or when my sister was a kid, when she was like 4, that movie was big. And my sister watched it literally 4 times a day for like a month. She just watched it on loop over and over and over.
Oh, that's so coming. Always on TV. That's so coming for me.
Yeah, so kind of ruined it for me. Inside Out, by the way, it almost got my top 5. Probably would if I
didn't. Oh, I cried.
That's painfully good. It's so creative.
Yeah, it's a really, really good movie. Toy Story 3, better than Toy Story 2. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah.
My mom cried 3 times at Toy Story 3 because we watched it like 2 days before I went away to school. So.
Aww.
Is getting deep into my life now. All right. I think Russell wants us to move on because he is no fun and is not a good sport. So we're going to move on to our episode sponsor, which also will be no fun because it's a really bad player. All right. I'll be back in just a second here on the next one. All right, welcome back to the headquarters. Sean Woodley, Russell Peddle, and Harsh Devay wrapping things up here mercifully. We're going to get to our episode sponsor here. This week's episode is brought to you by Rudy Gay.
Rudy Gay.
Oh, God.
Gay. It's sort of weird because Rudy Gay, when he got traded here, I didn't like love the trade for him. It felt like a Brian Colangelo trying to save his job thing, which sucked, but... I mean, Gay added some moments. I remember there was one game in his first stint with the Raptors, like the first few games after he started with the Raptors. He had like...
He had a couple game winners or something, didn't he?
Yeah, he had like a crazy game against the Pacers, I always remember, where like the Raptors and Pacers, this is when the Pacers were really good and the Raptors took him to overtime. I think they might have lost, but Gay had a ton of like, you know, I think he hit the shot that sent it to overtime. He might have sent it to double overtime with another shot. I can't actually remember this game. I'm going to try to find it here on Basketball Reference, but... that was a good game, and that was like the first. This was like the Rudy Gay trade, the first one that brought him here was like what brought me out of the little time where I just sort of checked out on the Raptors, because like, oh well, Rudy Gay, okay, cool, let's get back in on this. And then obviously he was bad, but you know, the trade that sent him away ended up being sort of the turning point for the franchise, which I think we always kind of have to remember. Like Rudy Gay did something good for us. He brought back Patrick Patterson and parts, those guys. Any other memories, Russell, for Rudy Gay from you?
Yeah, the funny thing is, when the trade happened, I was happy about it. Like, I remember thinking to myself, like I like this. I think having someone who, like, Rudy Gay wasn't a star, but I mean, he was a 20-point-per-game scorer, and it seemed like something to get excited about, like a player that like people knew a bit better. And it was during a time when there weren't that many players on the Raptors that were like considered at that level. So yeah, I mean, I remember hearing about it and telling my wife that like, hey, this is great. The Raptors just traded for someone that people might know. Like, this is great. This is cool. But then he shot too much and missed most of what he shot. So I got over that really quick. Then the trade happened, and of course everything that came after that, like you said, like they are where they are now because of that one deal. So trading for him to then lead to the team that they have now, I mean, I'm really happy that he was a Raptor for that reason.
So I just dug up that Raptors game I was talking about against the Pacers, and they did win in overtime against the Pacers. Rudy Gay did hit a game-winning shot. Gay's stat line for the game: 23 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists on 9 of 25 shooting. So,
sounds about right.
That on brand.
Yeah,
for sure. So this was before I became a more educated basketball fan. I was like, hey, Rudy Gay, look at him, 23 points, awesome. Yeah, that's not great. Harsh, anything from you?
When the trade was actually happening, I felt the same way as you did. Like, it seemed like a desperate GM making one last effort to save his job. Definitely smelled of that to me. But you know how fans are. Like, we talk ourselves into that stuff as soon as it... Like, we hate it at first, but then we talk ourselves into it. And that's sort of what happened with Rudy Gay. I'm like, oh, you know, we're getting the most talented guy in the trade. Like, you know, whatever. Jose Calderon wasn't the future here. But I do remember that for that half of the season after the trade happened, I think the Raptors were like 500 for the rest of the year, and they looked legitimately good at some points, and they looked dynamic, and that's what had people so excited about the following year. And obviously that ended up, you know, falling apart pretty quickly, and you know, the peak, or I guess the valley of the sadness of the Rudy Gay experience was when he went 11 of 37 against Houston.
Oh, I remember that so much.
And still hit like a buzzer beater. And it was like, it got to a point where he was jacking up so many shots. Like, I wanted him to hit, like, I wanted him to attempt 40 field goals. Like, I was just rooting for, I'm like, I don't care. Just get to 40 field goal attempts so I can laugh about it. Like, if he shot like 12 for 40, that would have been amazing. But I think he finished at 11 for 37 in a game we somehow won, I think. Which was the stupidest part. But yeah, like, I didn't enjoy the Rudy Gay experience, but I remember when we traded him, I felt that whether it was he who left or DeMar who left, I felt like the end result for the Raptors would have been pretty much the same because they were affecting each other's games, but I feel like individually they could have excelled.
Yeah, and DeMar, I think, has added a lot more.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. That was back then.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Rudy Gay, guys. This was a weird time. He was there for such a short amount of time, right?
Like, 51 games total, I think.
Yeah, it was a weird time in Raptors history. All right, guys, I think we've done it.
Are you sure you don't want to circle back and talk about Pixar movies some more? Because
I think Harsh and I might.
I think the one person who's left listening to this at this point would really like to hear which movie you would have put sixth in your rankings of. Anyway, sorry, I'm being a crotchety old man right now.
Hi, Arun. Oh, man. All right. Thanks for this, guys. Thanks for putting up with us, Russell, and our young ways. Anything coming down from you at the site?
Who, me?
Yes.
just my weekly stuff, the Dinos and Digits every Thursday, the FanDuel thing every Friday. That's mostly where I'm at right now. Whenever I can get time to write for the site, it's those two things. So I would say look out for those.
And Harsh, anything from you?
Nothing coming down for the time being. We'll probably figure something out for next week.
Yep. Listen to The Defeated?
Yes. Listen to the new podcast that myself, Arun, and Will launched. It's called The Defeated. Follow us on Twitter at The Defeated Pod.
Yeah, and you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Woodley Sean. Russell is at Rusty Pedal Bike. Harsh is at I Am Harsh Deve. Raptors HQ is obviously at Raptors HQ. You can follow the show on iTunes, subscribe, rate, review, everything. Do whatever you want to your heart's content. Give us nice ratings. That'd be nice. But thank you so much for listening. And next week we'll try to have less movie talk on our rooms over there. All right, thanks, guys.
Over!